Hi, this is Pam Brown.
I'm Ann Diver-Stamness, and this is Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50.
This week, our program continues with our examination of the ways in which people over 50 are reacting to and processing the election.
Our guest today is Ashton Applewhite, who is the author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism, and is PBS's 2016 Influencer of the Year. Welcome back to the program, Ashton.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We are so delighted that you came back on the program with us. People over 50 who've spent their lives focusing on the fight for equality, social justice, and a just and inclusive society feel sucker-punched and hopeless after this election. What's your response, and how do you envision ways for us to move forward?
I have to say, I was as surprised as everyone else, and am hoping to take part in political activism around it, as I did around the Iraq War and other causes. But where I've really been focusing and thinking hard is, I am an activist against ageism, working to, you know, make it as unacceptable as sexism and racism and all the other isms that seem newly and horrifyingly resurgent, or at least given permission to be resurgent. And I thought, you know, what does ageism even have to do with it? Is it a, you know, first world problem? Is it time to put it on the back burner until Medicare is in the crosshairs and work on all those other prejudices that just are demanding our bandwidth really legitimately? What I realized is that we don't have to choose, right? All forms of discrimination intersect with and compound one another. And the flip side is that when you make a country or a city or community a better place to be Muslim in, to be from, you know, another country in, to be poor in, to be a person of color, we also make it a better place in which to grow old. And I think the most important thing for each of us, young and old alike, is to figure out now, before the new president is in office and before we know what's actually going to happen, you know, to figure out which causes or which, you name it, which vulnerable population is the most important to you, to think about your priorities and then to show up. Here's the thing. Any group, if everyone in a group is the same age, whether it's 22 or 62, it's not going to be as creative and it's not going to be as effective. A corollary to that is if everyone around the table, if there are all ages, just as if there are people of different races or different sexual orientation, that's, of course, how you dismantle prejudice and stereotype, because if you're around people who aren't like you, you come to see them in all their variety, obviously. So by showing up at all ages for whatever cause is the most threatened, the most important, the pipeline, you name it, we dismantle ageism organically from the inside. It doesn't have to be a separate cause that we make important, that we add on, that we say, oh, no, you have to pay attention to this ism, too. It happens organically when people of all ages come together for whatever cause they think matters most.
Ashton, the ways in which race and gender figured into the election seem obvious, but what role did age play?
I don't think it played that much. I happened to be in London when the Brexit vote came down, and I think there are enormous analogies here. There was a tremendous, immediate, vitriolic upsurge of anti-olders sentiment. There were people saying, old white people, please die, and blaming the entire vote on older people. And it is true that older people in that Brexit vote did vote disproportionately to leave. I think it's one of those stereotypes that older people are conservative in general, broadly spoken, broadly writ. It's true that older voters do skew somewhat more conservative, but I don't think that was disproportionately at play in our election. And most importantly, of course, stereotypes say absolutely nothing about the likelihood of any given individual of a certain age voting for X or voting for Y.
The new administration will probably attempt to target older adults through the erosion of benefits like Medicare, as well as other populations and Social Security. What strategies do you recommend that we use to challenge this?
There are so many groups in the United States that have targeted knowledge about different aspects of the healthcare law, about different aspects of what's involved in senior housing, in resources, in budgeting, that I would find the consumer group whose policies you respect and do what they tell you to do on, again, on that specific targeted issue, whether it's do an email campaign, whether it's stand up outside an office, whether it is to organize your friends to have a vigil. I mean, I think we need to do every imaginable kind of protest that we've done in the past and think up some really clever new ones. There was a women's march on Monday in New York to say, you know, we refuse to have our rights taken away from us. And it was inspired by a political action in Iceland, where the wage gap is between men and women is smaller than here, but it's 14%. They organized a mass walkout of, Iceland's a small country and it's pretty well organized. You know, it's easy to reach people in a relatively homogenous population. And all the women walked out of their jobs at, 3:26 after 14% of their workday was not yet over. That's incredibly clever and incredibly effective. I think we need to be smart. We need to be creative. We need to involve artists, and we need to come up with visible, imaginative, powerful ways to say, we will not stand for having our rights revoked.
What responsibilities and roles do older adults have in our society post-election?
My immediate answer is the same right as all citizens. It's funny, we had a political meeting in my house with people of all ages, mostly my age. I'm 64, but there were some younger people. And one of the younger women said, she was African-American, and she said, you know, when I go to a protest, what I mostly see is people who have been going to protests all their lives. And I'd like to see more younger people out there, which I thought was interesting because, you know, it's true. We had the same group after the Iraq War, and we came up with the saying, our grief is not a cry for war. Did you ever hear that?
No.
It did travel across the country, and we did silent vigils, and, you know, we didn't stop the war. But I think it's important to still march because, first of all, we are stronger together, and because we are less likely to be victims of violence or seen as threats. I think it's really important to show up together and share that risk.
Ashton, you've given us so much to think about again today, and we want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
You're welcome.
That's all the time we have for today's show. Annie is our editor and engineer.
Tune in next Thursday to Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. For more information, past shows, and the link to our podcasts, email, and Facebook group, go to our website at chronologicallygifted.org.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Annie. Thanks so much for listening.
We'll be here next week, and we hope you will be too.